This is Carolyn Jones for the You Now and Then project on July 29th, 2019. I am the interviewer.
And hi, I'm Joan Bartle, and I am the interviewee.
Well, Joan, thank you so much for talking to me today.
My pleasure.
I'm really excited to hear about your experiences of the New Central New Jersey chapter of NOW, but I wondered if we could just start with a little bit of context about you. What brought you to Princeton, and when was that?
Well, I grew up in Philadelphia, and I came to Princeton on a blind date when I was 17 or 18 to a football game and fell in love with the town, the campus, the Nassau Street, the beautiful people, the whole idea. So later, when I married and lived in Philadelphia for a while, moved to Virginia, my husband was transferred to New York City, family in Philadelphia, job in New York, I looked on the map and saw Princeton and went, that's it. And I was so pleased. I continue to be thrilled with my life in Princeton. It's a wonderful place, for sure.
And what year was it that you moved to Princeton?
In 1969, I think. 68, 69.
Okay. And so you were living here and your husband was commuting into the city?
That's
New
correct.
York City.
Yes.
What was Princeton like when you
were there? Oh, well, it was very different. I actually was a guest at the Nassau Inn. And while my husband went off to New York and I was house hunting and I was to pick him up at the train station, but I got lost, came back to the Nassau Inn. He was at the tap room. It was virtually empty. The bartender was at the other end of the bar, never came to service and asked what I wanted. But when we summoned him, he said, we don't serve ladies. You'll have to leave. It was a shock. And I left. I didn't say anything. I didn't have the awareness or the wherewithal, if you will, to say anything. So I left. But it was struck me for sure. So later when I was settled in and actually working at WPST Nassau Broadcasting, there was a sit-in to have the tap room changed from males only. So we did the sit-in for several days, and we just sat there and drank water. I remember distinctly we left tips for the servers because we didn't want to discriminate against them, and they finally changed it. It was really quite a stir, if you will.
Yeah. And tell me, going back to that moment when the barman told you he couldn't serve you, had you ever experienced such discrimination before?
Never. I just couldn't imagine it. It was such a wake-up call to the discrimination that goes on every day. Still.
And at that moment, did you reconsider your choice to move to Princeton?
No. I was puzzled, and I thought, oh, well, this is interesting. But no, I didn't change my mind.
And then how did you got involved with the sit-in? Can you take me back right to the beginning of how you got involved with the group who organized the sit-in?
Well, it was through the Central New Jersey NOW, which was the only chapter of NOW in the state at the time. One of the things that was one of the things that the chapter did, along with the work that I was so involved with Women in Words and Images and our study Dick and Jane as Victims, mm-hmm. as well as the You Now Day Nursery, mm-hmm. all of which were so radical at the time. Pretty funny, mm-hmm. yes.
So going back to the Central New Jersey chapter of NOW, mm-hmm. had you heard about NOW before you moved to Princeton?
NOW
as an organization?
No, it was new when I got here. Everything was a wake-up call. I was very young, and it took about a year, and they were just forming. I saw ads in Town Topics, so I thought, oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. It was something to do, so I went to a meeting and loved the women that I met there, and at a subsequent meeting, someone stood up and read some passages from the textbooks that were used in the Princeton schools. And we went, what? You know, just look at her. Just look at her. She's just like a girl. She gives up, kind of thing. And so they said, who wants to participate in the study? And I raised my hand, and we got together, and yeah, and that was the beginning of the whole project.
Well, I would love, in our conversation, I'd like to spend a lot of time talking about that, because I think there is so much going on. But before we get there, if we can just go back to your early, those early months. Was this in the first few months that you joined the NOW chapter? Or had you settled into Princeton for a while?
It was probably within the first 6 months. Yeah, just getting my kids settled in school, and we moved in the end of August.
Okay.
So yeah, I don't remember exactly, but it was fairly early on.
And so you'd seen an ad in Town Topics. Do you remember what it was about the ad that made you, that intrigued you or drew you in?
Oh, well, that's a good question. Well, Betty Friedan's book was very popular at the time, Feminine Mystique. And I think there were references to the Feminine Mystique and are you being treated equally? Just some provocative. They had several ads. But it was the days when classified ads were very popular.
Yes.
In Town Topics. So yes.
And so, were your first meeting, was at someone's house? Is that what you said?
I believe the first meeting was at the university. But there were plenty of meetings that we met at the university, we met at the Unitarian Church, and we met in people's homes. So I'm not sure which was first.
Did you have any of your friends coming with you, or was this you arriving at these meetings by yourself in the beginning?
I actually went by myself, and some of my longest-term friends and best friends are women that I've met there and interacted with, particularly with the textbook work. But all of it was just a great group of women.
Wonderful. So,
yeah.
So what do you remember about that first meeting? Or those first meetings?
Yeah, first meeting, I remember looking around and wondering, because it was all so new to me. But it didn't take long to get familiar and comfortable with the topics. I mean, it was well organized, and introductions, and
Do you remember who was leading the meetings?
Well, I think it was Jennifer McLeod at the time. She was a real mover and shaker.
Mm-hmm.
That's who I remember the most. But there were Elaine Schulman,
Showalter.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yes, she was very involved. I remember her name.
Right. Yeah. So take us to the moment when you had decided to sit in at the Nassau Inn at the Yankee Doodle Tap Room. Were you the only woman who had experienced direct discrimination, or do you remember it being something that many women had experienced?
Well, I think I was the only one that had such a direct, you know, they saw the sign that said men only, and they couldn't go in, but I never saw the sign, I didn't know. No one else particularly shared with me that they had a similar experience, but I'm sure there are lots of women.
There was a sign that said no women?
Yes. No, it said males only. No girls.
Right. And then, so you said you sat there for several days?
Yes. We got there early, before noon, mm-hmm. and we took up first one table and then two tables. So there were a good number of us. And we had our water, and we talked. And as I said, we left gratuities for the servers so they wouldn't be damaged. And there was publicity about it. I don't have any of the publicity, but there was publicity and pressure. And it probably took three or four days, and some negotiation with the management of Nassau Inn to change it. Then later, after they made it okay for ladies to be there, they didn't want to take down the sign. So we said, well, okay, we'll just have some more sit-ins. Okay, we'll take it down.
Was this all part of the same action, or was that a later action, the removal of the sign?
It was shortly thereafter, because that was a big part of it. But it still felt so. We would make it a point to go to lunch there, but it still felt strange because it was mostly men.
Right.
Yeah.
And do you remember what the how it felt inside the tap room whilst you were sitting there? Was there hostility or amusement?
We were like invisible. Yeah, they didn't pay attention to us. No one came over and said, you'll have to leave, or yeah, that's what I recall.
You mentioned the word radical earlier. Can we talk a little bit more about what that meant to you at the time?
Well, we were called lesbian communist.
By okay. Who called you?
Various and sundry men. Okay. And that was like, quote, the worst thing you could be called. But we dealt with that issue as a group. And we went, so, you know, and just let it roll off our back, which is so... You know, it was a wonderful life history, life altering experience that you didn't have to react to names, name calling.
They would call that to your face or in the newspaper? How would you know?
Yeah, a combination. We were referred to, I don't recall being called that to my face.
Mm-hmm. It was just known.
Yeah, it was said in a bunch of, yeah.
And you mentioned that you had children, they were in elementary school at
yes,
that stage?
Yes, they were.
Do you remember how you described this event to them, if at all?
Oh, I did. In fact, I have a daughter who's well grown right now, and she wrote an article called A Feminist Daughter. And she makes reference to those women took her mommy away. But it didn't take her long to realize that it was okay that her mommy was a little different, because I was very involved with them, and I volunteered at their schools and in the classroom and spoke to their teachers, and they kind of liked that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who did she write the article for?
She writes for Medium.
Oh, okay. This is what something she's written recently.
Recently, yes. In the last year.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I'll send you a copy. It's wonderful.
I would love to read that.
Yeah.
So you were part of this group. You met your friend community through this group.
I did.
Sounds it. Yeah. What was Princeton like? What other impressions did you have in that first year of what the town was like?
Well, that's a challenge. Well, I remember the cycle. I remember coming in August, and you could park anywhere, and you'd go to the grocery store, and then September hit, and it was a totally different, a different town, almost. But I, yes, I applied for a job at Nestle Broadcasting, but I said I could only work part-time because my daughter was in kindergarten. I could only work in the morning. And so they said, no, we only hire full-time, but then somebody went on vacation and they asked me to come in for a couple weeks, so I did, and I did her job at half the time, so they hired me and let me do that job, and so I had a good 5 or 6 years at Nestle Broadcasting, where I then went from secretarial support to a salesperson, which was another discriminatory thing. They said girls can't sell, but I knew I could. And so they paid me commission only, where they were paying the men salary and commission. So I outsold everyone and became the sales manager after several men who were promoted but didn't quite make it. So that was nice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was a great move.
Right.
Yeah.
I would love to talk more about what you were involved in with the New Jersey chapter of NOW.
Uh-huh.
So you were involved in the sit-in at Nassau Inn, but this was not your main work.
No.
Can you tell me more about what took all of your time and energy at that time?
Right. Now? My absolute focus was on the children's books that were being used, the Scott Forstmann, the Harper Row, et cetera, that were being used by my children, mm-hmm. our children. So we
just
went...
to clarify, to be used by your children when they, as they were learning to read.
Yes, they're learning to read. Mm-hmm. Yes. So I went to the school librarian and told her what I was doing, and she with open arms gave me all, lent me all the books that I wanted, and was very helpful. So we got together and we created a checklist of what we were seeing, and we determined some, what we were seeing was boy-centered stories and girl-centered stories, and then what they were about, whether they, you know, like the boys, as it turns out, were adventure stories and daring and brave, and the girls were shown with washing dishes and aprons and helping their mom and standing around watching with their hands behind their back. So we did a checklist, and different women took different books. We also then double-checked ourselves. We didn't have computers or spreadsheets, but we checked each other to make sure we weren't slanting anything, because we really wanted to do a good study. So we did an initial study and sent it to Ms. Magazine, which was just starting, and they printed it and did a, which I don't have a copy of.
What year was this?
Oh, 70? Okay. Yeah. 69, 70. Okay. And so that was a big kick.
And tell me, what was your article about? Could you summarize it for us?
Well, it was mostly about the stereotypes that we were seeing, and that the boys were doing and the girls were watching, and that the biographies of men were varied, and 6-to-1 over biographies of women, which the women's were Joan of Arc and Madame Curie and, you know, just a few notable women. So it was just a kind of a wake-up call for a lot of us, because not only the factual stuff about our children, all of our children, being indoctrinated or trapped with these images, but that was how we were raised, and how, so it was a consciousness raising, if you will, of the stereotypes and the assumptions that were made about women. So I was, you know, 30 at the time, so it was like a wonderful wake up call to just see their other options and how we were all we were trapped. Mm-hmm. Because I used those books, those Dick and Jane books. In fact, I have some in my basement that I bought at book sales, at garage sales or whatever, from 1946. It was,
right.
Yeah.
And so was it when you said somewhere you were at a meeting of now and someone brought one of these books in?
Right.
Is that what started the whole study?
Yes.
Do you remember who it was?
I don't, because she moved away shortly thereafter and never really participated.
Mm-hmm.
I could probably talk to some of my friends and get her name, but I don't remember her name. Yeah.
And when she started, when she drew attention to these books, was it sort of a flash of insight for you?
Yes, that's a
good
way to put it.
You've never thought about it that way before.
Well, you just make assumptions about the schools, that they're doing the best for our children.
Mm-hmm.
And they surely thought they were. We later met with the publishers of these books, of the presidents and vice presidents of 5 of the companies. A meeting that was arranged by a group of women in New York who were doing a similar study on trade books and library books. And they were wonderful. They have daughters. They have sisters, mothers, you know. And they were very receptive, and some of them hired us to come and consult with their writers. Most of them were women.
How many years later was this? After
this was probably 75, 76, maybe 74.
So quite rapid. I mean.
It was pretty rapid. It was ripe.
Yes.
It was the beginning of the feminist movement, and it was ripe. The civil rights and women standing up and women and men realizing that this was not supportive, mm-hmm. you know, and really damaging and limiting, especially since it was the beginning of mothers working, where the only image of a mother working was at a school cafeteria in our books. Yeah, it was the only image of her. I mean, the later books showed mom going to work and mom as a scientist and so forth. But initially, all the study was incredibly narrow stereotyping. Yeah.
So going back to that first working group where you were mm-hmm. doing your first analysis on the books, mm-hmm. how big was the group?
Well, there were probably 12 or 15 of us. And some that came in and out and for moving or whatever reason. But there were seven of us who were the core group who really developed the slideshow and the pictures and the writing. We had a writer and we had a photographer in our group. Yes, so there were seven of us that were the core.
Tell me about the slideshow. What was that?
Well, we took pictures, we took images from the books and created a theme. And I can send you the link to view the we've turned it into a PowerPoint, and we'll be doing a voiceover with it. So you can add this to the interview if you'd like. Mm-hmm. And it will be on our website, womenonwordsandimages.com. So that will be there. Yeah.
And so you had the slideshow, and the photographer was taking pictures of the images in the book?
In the book, yeah. She was one of our group, Pride Brown.
Pride Brown. Uh-huh. And who was your writer? Do you remember her name?
Well, we all wrote. It was also Pride, who's a really good writer, who kind of tightened it up and did some editing.
So as a team, you produced a slideshow, and then who would you present the slideshow to?
Oh, good question. So we presented it to anyone who would listen, and I remember presenting it to a women's group in Princeton, and they feigned interest. And after we did it, and we were so excited about it and animated, they said, "Thank you very much for coming." So that was one instance, and shortly thereafter we presented it to a group in New York who said, "Thank you very much for coming," and we said, "We're not going to do this for free anymore," and we started charging, and that's when things really happened, because people value what they pay for. We didn't charge very much, and we rented the slideshow. And Suzanne Freeman from Princeton University and Women's Studies was just beginning. They purchased the slideshow for $300.
Was that a fortune?
That was a lot of money, yes. So we rented it for $35 and sold it. And we sold it to Women's Studies across the country.
And when you say you sold it, describe the technology you were using at the time.
Well, it was the carousel slides, 140 slides, and we'd ship it in a box, and they'd ship it back, or, you know, we'd get a new copy made when we sold the copy.
And who was purchasing it other than the university?
Mostly the universities. Mostly the universities, that's what I recall.
And who was their audience? Students?
They're students. They're students, and I don't know all of who, but I should go through my records and see how many different universities and colleges bought it.
And what kind of feedback were you getting at the time from the people who purchased it?
Oh, thank you. They would rent it first and then buy it, or they knew of our work and knew it was valuable. Ah. Yeah, it was very positive. Mm. Yeah.
And you said that there was another group in New York working on something similar?
Right. They call themselves the Feminist on Children's Media, and they studied the trade books, the books in libraries, and made a recommended list of positive images. They called it Miss Muffet Fights Back, their little booklet. So they were like a couple years older than us, and of course much more sophisticated since they were from New York.
When you say they, do you mean the group? Or
yes,
the women?
It was a group.
Okay.
It was a group. And they just kind of took us under their wings because they loved what we were doing and got us speaking engagements. We spoke to the Association of American Publishers. We spoke to the Association of Psychologists, I believe was the name of the group. And we did our slideshow and answered questions. So
given that they were older than you, was your work inspired by their work?
No, we didn't know about them. I don't know if it was the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, I think this came after, perhaps from the Ms. Magazine article, because we sent it out to many feminist publications that were just starting, so they contacted us. Mm-hmm.
And so by sheer coincidence, they had been working on a similar track?
Correct, okay. With the trade books.
And is that when you said earlier the time was ripe, which I think is such a lovely word to have used to describe the time.
Would
you say that was part of the ripening moment?
Right. And then we got this publicity in the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times, the front page of both, and the town topics. And it was just very enlivening and supportive to know we were doing something valuable. And as I really look back on my life, it was a real turning point for me. Not only the awareness, but how we all work together as women. Not only in the bigger sense through NOW and supporting the other projects like the UNOW Day Nursery and some other racial discrimination issues, but how the seven of us or the 18 of us as it flowed, work together without any dissension because we were dealing with a bigger issue. So it gave me another perspective on life of, what's important to do a task, to see a need and to accomplish it and to work so nicely and wonderfully with other women of all ages. Some are younger, some are older, but we all have this common mission, which we need a little more of today. Not women, but the world. Yes.
Thinking about that time, you had young children.
Mm-hmm.
You were working.
Mm-hmm.
And proving yourself in the workplace, and you were very involved in this project and possibly other things too. How did you juggle all of that?
Just pure motivation and energy. I was energized by the project. I worked at night on this. I worked the weekends. There was a period of time when we first started where I wasn't working at a job. it was just sheer motivation, and I was 30.
Did you feel as if you were making a difference?
Yes, yes, yes.
And how could you tell that you were making a difference? How could you sense that progress?
It's just the reaction, the letters, the speaking engagements. The New York Times had several articles. The Trenton paper, Town Topics was a kick. To see your name in lights, so to speak. So it was a little bit of, I guess you call that ego, but it didn't seem to be ego at the time. It was just like, oh, this really works. I can make a difference. Now, when I say I know that my associates were just there, also, that they were making a difference and that this was a worthwhile project. Yeah.
And just in terms of terminology, you mentioned this before, and other interviews have too, women on words and images.
Uh-huh.
Can you just clarify what that is?
Well, we were, I do remember distinctly having a particular meeting where we decided we needed a name, and we needed to incorporate. We became a subject or S because we were earning money, so we had to do something with that money. But we needed a name. And we just brainstormed and laughed, and we came up with Women on Words and Images. And we called ourselves the Wowie Group. And, we went through several names. But that was the one we settled on, and it was I just remember sitting on the floor at one of our houses, you know, one of our houses, and like that, then it just clicked that was the name.
Thank you. And were you still a part of the New Jersey chapter of NOW?
Yes. 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 We went to meetings and we presented our work, and they were very, you know, everyone was interested. We presented the slideshows several times at different meetings. We met upstairs at the Army Navy store on Witherspoon Street.
Can you describe that place? We know that used to be the headquarters of Central New Jersey chapter of NOW.
Yes.
What was it like, that office?
Well, it was the third floor walk up, and it was just almost an attic, but it had finished floors and walls, what I recall, but it was a good size, and we had our tables and chairs in there, and it was raw, but a good place to be.
And is that where you would do a lot of the work on the early childhood reading?
No, we did it at home. We did it at home at our houses. And we, as I said, we did it individually. We take certain books, and then we check each other to make sure.
So, Women on Words and Images. By the time you had come up with that formal name for the group, you were no longer a subcommittee of NOW. You were a separate organization. Is that right?
I'm not sure how to identify it. I mean, we identified with NOW. But as I said, we were dealing with the money, and we had to deal with that and pay taxes and so forth. And so we did.
Okay.
Yeah.
I need to ask you to describe two things that we have here that we will hopefully be able to attach to our interview. The first one is a photograph from the Trenton Times, Sunday Times advertiser in Trenton, dated October 11th, 1970.
Right.
And there's a photograph of four people. Could you describe this photo to us?
Well, I can't remember exactly how the photo came to be, but we posed for this, and I'm not sure where this was, these three women, Liz and Irene and Lynn, were part of the extra group. I was the only one that was in the core group at that time, so I don't remember how this came to be. But it was another promotion of what we were doing.
And you're looking, you're all four women. So the four women are Liz Hagen, Evelyn, Evelyn McGinnis. Joan Bartle, and Irene Moore.
Right.
And all four of you are looking very seriously at a sheaf of papers.
And books.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And are these the books that are on the table? Are these the early childhood readers that you're analyzing?
Uh-huh. Yes.
And is this piece of paper that you're all flipping through with very solemn looks on your face? Is this your analysis of the sex stereotyping?
It could be. It could be one of the initial papers that we typed on the typewriter.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, it's a lovely picture, and we'll attach that to the interview. The second thing I'm going to ask you to describe, I'm putting in front of you a yellow book. If you could read the title and tell us what this is.
Well, we called it Dick and Jane as Victims. Dick and Jane was the most popular reading book series from Scott Forstman. So the subtitle is Sex Stereotyping in Children's Readers. Of course, today it would be Gender Stereotyping in Children's Readers. And also today, these series of readers do not exist anymore. They have individual books, less structured, if you will, or maybe more structured, I'm not sure. But it shows some stereotypical things popping out of the books, like a truck and a broom and an apron and a rolling pin and a mirror and a hammer, a flower. And I love the illustrations. In the back of the book, there's an illustration of a little boy and a little girl stomping on a book. So it was this was the second edition. This was the expanded 75 edition. The original one was first published in 69, I believe. I don't have one with me. And the same section, the same book, except we have in this section expanded 1975, which is an update from the books that were published in 72 that shows some updated children of color, updated hairstyles, and little girls in pants instead of just always a dress. And it does show, we found, mothers working as a scientist or in an office, and, but there were still a lot of the same themes also of girls watching or having calamities or and boys, well, not wrestling alligators, but close to.
And so was the first book called Dick and Jane as Victims, or was it?
No, the same thing. Okay. It was the same cover, except it was green. Okay.
And was there a book called Dick and Jane Fight Back?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And I just came across that, and I didn't bring it with me, and I'm not up to date on it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So this book that you produced, who would buy these books?
Individuals mm-hmm. would buy one. Or now chapters would buy 10 or 20. Universities, the same people who bought the slideshow, would buy the books. Yes.
Wonderful. And there are other books, too, that you produced a little bit later. Is that right?
Right. I actually want to say one more thing about this. We went to a conference, and there was a woman, Lenore Weissman, I remember her name. She was at the University of California, one of the universities there. And this was the beginning of computers. She had a staff. She did a similar study. And her findings were the same. 3-2, 6-1. Yeah, so that was a real kick to have, because we were, quote, housewives, moms, teachers, etc. But she's a professor of psychology or sociology and found the same thing. So we're very happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
We later did a study called what we call Channeling Children, which was a study of, this was in 1975, of primetime television and the images that were shown there. Analysis and the same thing with the images that were shown on primetime television. So we each took a show and watched it every week. We didn't have VCRs. It was very interesting. So yes, we actually got a small grant from the federal government to produce this. And another book called Help Wanted, which we called Sexism in Career Education Materials. And so, again, how they were directing boys and girls to into job possibilities. This was in 1975 also. So we were just, yeah.
I would like to come back in a few minutes to what else the Now chapter was doing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Before we do that, I just want to ask you what it was like when there was a lot of publicity about what you were doing and positive feedback, and you were going off to meet the publishers.
Mm-hmm.
What did that feel like?
It felt like we were grown up. yeah, I felt that we were important, that we had something to say. And it was a revelation because the publishers, for instance, at that meeting, after a while, they found out that we were okay people. They said, we just didn't know what to expect from you, if we were going to be angry, whatever. And we joked and said, we didn't know what to expect from you. And we were all very nice, and we were all very, you know, on the same page, that they really seemed to care. And they did do things about it. And they formed women's committees to look at this. They have our book and our research, and it was very gratifying to get those results.
Yeah. And yeah. So in future editions of those readers, could you see a difference?
Yes. Well, the our expanded edition shows some of the differences, but they were still, it's challenging because to produce a series is expensive, and then you have school adoption states, Texas and California, and they were two big states, and they had to please Texas and California, two different, very different states. But along the way, we were on television, we were on radio. Two of our women testified at the Texas state adoption. That was another whole issue, wasn't it? testimony. We testified in Washington, Title IX. So we were busy. Yeah.
Let's go back to, that's very much the large scale. Let's come back to the smaller scale again. Mm-hmm. So this came out of the Central New Jersey chapter of NOW.
It did.
In those early days. What else was the NOW chapter working on in parallel to the Women on Words and Images?
Well, the NOW nursery was very exciting. And it was, my kids were past that age, so I was focused on this, so I didn't get involved. But I was very intrigued and excited that that was happening. I remember the women who were involved sharing how they were going to do things and what they were going to do and how. And it was just very exciting. So I attended presentations, but I didn't actively work on it, just because I was focused on other things, but we were very supportive.
Do you remember who was leading the initiative on the daycare?
I do not. Do you have a name that it might recall?
There are several people. Liz Hagen, who
yes.
also worked on the Dick
okay.
and Jane,
mm-hmm.
and Victory Chase.
Oh, Victory worked with us.
Uh-huh. Francesca Stonica.
Oh, Fran. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
That's Fran is very much a mover. Yes.
Right. And Mary Joyce Mulroy was involved in the early days, from what we can tell. But, as you say, with the readers, it was a large group.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so here's Liz's name here, and
just as you're looking at
and Victory Chase,
the
who worked with us. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
So in the papers, some of the early papers we can find about the daycare once it was started in September
mm-hmm.
1970, the daycare received a donation from the Women on Words and Images.
Yes.
And in those early days, every penny counted.
Yeah.
Do you remember anything about how that donation came to be made?
I think that's when we were first beginning to make money and earn money, and we didn't quite know what to do with it. And we looked around and we saw this, oh, let's give $100 here. So that was very exciting to make that donation. And of course, $100 then was a lot more than today, but yeah.
And the other thing, you said that you would make your presentation to whoever would listen to you. Again, in our early records, it looks as if UNOW's first set of teachers sat through a presentation as well. Do you remember anything about that?
I don't. But as you say, it's coming back a little bit. That of course makes sense. That they wanted it, and we of course would, as I said before, make the presentation to anyone.
Right.
It's a powerful presentation. I hope that your readers, listeners, will go to our website and see it for a variety of reasons. But yeah,
right.
It's powerful. It was. Extraordinary at the time, we think.
Right. And one of the founding philosophies of UNOW is the reduction of sex stereotyping.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember discussions within NOW meetings about how that philosophy was founded and articulated?
Well, a lot of it had to do with language. And it was criticized to that you couldn't possibly say he, she. You know, that's just too awkward. We couldn't do that. But that wasn't readily accepted. But the language is a big part of it. And showing examples of accomplished women and men who were keeping house, or you know, just the non-stereotyped, which seems almost silly today, doesn't it? But yeah, so that was asking, you know, children to look outside of their. I remember. Well, it's not the now day nursery, but I was a room mom for my son, and his teacher was very much into all this and just totally agreed and really supportive. But she was taking him on a class trip to one of the children's mom, who was a potter, and she said, "We can't all go at one time, so tomorrow we'll take the boys, and the next day we'll take the girls." And I went, you know, take this side of the class and this side of the class. So she did. Mm-hmm. You just have to scratch the surface, and if someone's willing to look outside and be creative, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell me about the other institutions you were involved with. You mentioned earlier the Unitarian Church. Were there other membership groups that were part of your world at that time?
Other than my children's school and the Unitarian Church, they had our church bulletin. I don't remember what year it was, but someone was Mr. and Mrs. John Smith. And so I went to them and said, you know, how about make it John and Mary Smith? Right, done. The other issues at the time were abortion choice. And I worked with a group called NARO, which initially was National Association to Reform Abortion Laws. We worked through the YW, here in town, and it later became the National Association to Repeal Abortion Laws. So that was another group I was involved with.
And what sorts of things would you do as part of NARO?
We would get petitions signed. Mm-hmm. And then we would meet every week and send postcards to the people who signed it, telling them to call their legislator or take various and sundry actions.
And how were you received in Princeton when you were doing all of this work, not just with NARO, but also with NOW?
I was received. I hung with people that understood and supported the work. I don't remember any resistance to any of it. It was the Y. The YWCA was supporting abortion choice way back. So that was a credible. I mean, there were underpinnings of, you know, lesbian communist and so forth, but we didn't deal with it. There is one other, now that we're into this. The issue of lesbianism came up at the NOW meeting, and there was it was a topic for National NOW, and there was a conference in California. Well, none of us could afford to go to California, so I fortunately made the suggestion that we all chip in whatever amount of money it was, $10, $25, whatever, I've forgotten. And we, anybody who can go, put their name in a hat, and that person would go, all expenses paid, and guess who won the draw?
Who?
I did. So one of my chores, my task, was to particularly pay attention to the issue of lesbianism. Well, I didn't know anything about lesbianism. It was a whole new world. But I went to I did my, you know, duty, and I went to all the seminar, the breakout sessions about lesbianism, and my job was to report back to the NOW chapter. which I did, and I had the help of a woman who was a lesbian, and we made a presentation to the NOW chapter at the monthly meeting.
What year was this?
Oh, boy. I wonder.
Early 70s?
Early 70s.
And yeah. What was the tenor of your presentation?
Well, I'd have to search my brain for that. What was the tenor? I'm not sure. I don't remember specifically. I remember it was a challenge for me because it was such a new topic, and it was a challenge for everyone. And I think, I shared my thoughts about the issue, and that it was received well. That it was a challenge for us to talk about.
And was it to accept lesbians as part of the membership?
Totally.
What was
yes.
the issue?
Because we were criticized for being a white group, for one, and so that was part of expanding our base and reaching out to all women and men.
Right.
Yeah.
And did the local New Jersey chapter take a position?
Well, they took a position. I mean, they did take a stand. Remember, we were the only chapter in New Jersey at the time for quite some number of years. And so what we did and said, and for the extent that we could do the communication, it affected the whole state and Pennsylvania too, Philadelphia. So just the stand that it was accepting and generally consciousness raising about the issue.
Okay, so the position was to welcome lesbians within
yes.
the group?
And not to be afraid right. of them, or it's not a mystery.
And do you know what happened on a national scale with this issue?
I forget the sequence of events. Have to look back on the history of that one.
Right, right. It's a rich and complicated
isn't
history.
It?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that is fascinating, and all of this is just, you paint such a rich picture of what Princeton was like in those days in New Jersey, and also what was going on nationally. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about to highlight what it was like in those days, and perhaps about the impact of your work?
Well, I think that the power of people who care can make a difference. It was happening so fast that I appreciated it at the time, but in retrospect, I appreciate it after. As it impacted my life, that whatever I set out to do and like-minded people working together can be done. I'm currently working on creating a public bank for New Jersey, and I'm working with a group that works nationally, Public Banking Institute, that was formed after the 2008 recession, looking at what's going on with our banking system. Why are we sending all our money to Wall Street, to banks that pay themselves exorbitant compensation while we're suffering here or not having all the resources we want in New Jersey? So Governor Murphy is in favor of it, and we're working with a number of supportive groups that see the value. So we have a website called bankingonnewjersey.org, New Jersey spelled out, bankingonnewjersey.org.
And so you see the work that you did in those early days as building blocks for successful initiatives, is that what
I do.
Say?
I do, and I recognize it. I built a business that was couldn't be done. I've accomplished things that, you know, that this work early on made a difference in my mental attitude towards accomplishments and activities. So it was life altering, and looking back is a kick.
Well, Joan Bartle, what an inspiring conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. This is the end of the interview.
Thank you.